So how we view ourselves is very important. If you're very arrogant, that's going to work against you. If you look really down on yourself, I'm not talking about being humble. I'm talking about if you look too much down on yourself, that you're nothing and you're worthless, then you can't do what God has called you to do. So we have to be humble, and we have to see ourselves appropriately. I'm not going to rehash all of last week's lesson, but that was last week's lesson talking about our personal identity and who we are, who we're chosen to be, who we're called to be. And knowing that, we can then accomplish great things when we realize that we're a child of God and we have power and authority in Him. So that was last week. So this week, as we go into identity theft, there's another area that we really need to consider and to look at. Today we're talking about Satan's identity. So we need to just kind of discuss this a little bit, because there is a perception in this world, and my prayer tonight was that not even in reference to this lesson tonight, but God, help me to discern your voice. Help me to discern what's going on in the world. Help me to discern truth, and help me to discern lies. Those things that are happening, those agendas that are out there, whether they be political or whether they be have to do with different identity things. There's a lot of identity crisis going on right now. You know we're in identity crisis when they're putting litter boxes in schools and they're okay with it, and it's not for animals. You know we have a problem. We know we have a problem with truth. This is not just something that's happening in New York City or Chicago. There's people in this church that work at schools that have litter boxes in them for the students because of how they identify. We have a problem with truth. We have a problem with identity. And so we have to discern when we're hearing things, whatever the psychologists say, whatever the world says, we have to understand. But what is truth, not just what the majority are okay with, or the majority say. So before we get on Satan's identity, I'm kind of looking at the culture. I'm kind of looking at what he's doing, and we have to begin to see him through what he's doing. And so a lot of times we view Satan as this party guy. In fact, we see in a lot of concerts that there's the goat head, which is representative of Satanism. We see that there's snake heads and there's red in the background, and it's, you don't have to, you know, it seems like almost every Grammy award service, any music awards thing that they're having, that somebody has got some type of satanic looking thing. And I know it's all entertainment, right? It's all just for fun. Well, what it's doing is it's trying to send this message that Satanism is cool. Now, Pastor, are you saying that these people are devil worshipers? I don't know. I'm not saying they are. I'm not saying they're not. I know that some would be doing it just because it's cool, and there's an attachment that would seem like this is the cool thing to do. Bad is good. And so if it looks nice or wholesome, then, you know, it's Little House on the Prairie, it's Andy Griffith, and so that's not cool, that's not fun. But, you know, why does the girl always want to be with the bad boy? Bad boys might make for exciting dates, they make for horrible husbands. And so there's this draw towards music, and this draw towards darkness, and this it's cool. Bands, music groups always have that tendency towards things that are bad, evil, and it's cool. There's this perception, I've heard people say this before, I've heard people say, well, I would rather go to hell with my friends and party with my friends in hell than to go to heaven. Oh, Well, let's park on that for a minute, shall we? I've heard country songs years ago. There was a country song years ago that said, if heaven ain't like Dixie, I don't want to go. Well, it's not. I've been down south. I've been to Dixie, Lanny. I've been in Dixieland. Go there a couple times a year down in southeast Alabama. I'm hoping heaven's considerably better than that. I like Alabama, but I think heaven's going to be considerably better than Baker Hill, Alabama. If you think hell is going to be a party, you're deceived. You don't know the identity of what that place is all about. It's not fun. It's not exciting. You won't be partying there. Hell is torture. Hell is isolation. Hell is punishment. To say I would rather go to hell with my friends is like saying I would rather go to a concentration camp with my friends. I would rather go to some of the concentration camps that were in World War II. I would rather go to some of the prison camps in Vietnam and be there with my friends than to be somewhere else with less people that I used to hang with. So let's talk about Satan's identity, his true identity, because he's viewed as this really cool, naughty figure. And it's really much darker and much worse than that. Many of you know what the devil looks like. At least I do. I know what he looks like because my mom, when I was a kid, used to buy this ham stuff in a can. And it had this little red guy on it, Bryce. He was skinny. He had these horns. And he had this pitchfork. And he had this thing at the end of his tail. So I know what he looks like. This deviled ham stuff that my mom used to buy. So I think I know his identity. I think I would know him if he showed up. Or would I? Or would I? Because he might show up as an angel of light. He might show up as a beautiful woman. He might show up as a job promotion. He might show up as an opportunity. And so we have to understand who he is in his true identity. He's tried to impose or tried to become as God and steal the hearts of people. Sun Tzu, in the book The Art of War, he was a Chinese military general. And he says this, if you know the enemy, why is it important that we know the devil? Not just, I know God, I got a relationship with God. You better know your enemy. If you've ever played sports, you know you've got to know your enemy. When I played in high school a little bit, we would have films. We would not only practice our plays week after week after week, but Saturday mornings we were watching films. We were watching video of the next team we're about to play to find out what is their plays. What do they do in this situation? What plays do they normally run? Who's their star players? How do we stop them? How have other teams stopped them? We studied them. And I've got news for you. You're no friend of his either. And I will promise you, he's studying you too. Now get this. He's been studying humanity for probably 8,000 years. So he's pretty good at this. He knows what he's doing. He's watching behaviors. And so this Chinese military general said, if you know the enemy and know yourself, you need not fear the results of 100 battles. If you know yourself, but not the enemy, for every victory gained, you will also suffer a defeat. You win some, you lose some. For every victory gained, you will also suffer defeat. If you know neither the enemy nor yourself, you will succumb, you will lose, in every battle. This is why this series of lessons on identity are crucial. You've got to know who you are, which we studied last week. Tonight, we're going to figure out who the enemy is so that we can know who we're dealing with here. So it won't be the first account we'll come across Satan in the Bible, but this is going to be an account where it will talk about Satan before Genesis. And Ezekiel 28, starting at verse 11, it talks about the lamentation of the king of Tyre, which most scholars would agree that this is a foreshadowing, this is a description of Satan. It says this in verse 11. Moreover, the world, and remember this description of who he is. And it's probably not the guy on the can of deviled ham that my mom would buy. Moreover, the word of the Lord came to me saying, Son of man, take up a lamentation. Now, a lamentation, if you don't know what that is, lament is a prayer expressing sorrow, pain, or confusion. So it says, Son of man, take up a time of sorrow, a time of pain for the king of Tyre, and say to him, Thus says the Lord God, you were the seal of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. You were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering, the sardis, topaz, and diamond, beryl, onyx, and jasper, sapphire, turquoise, and emerald with gold. The workmanship of your timbrels and pipes was prepared for you on the day you were created. You were the anointed cherub whose covers I established you. You were on the holy mountain of God. You walked back and forth in the midst of fiery stones. You were perfect in your ways from the day you were created till iniquity was found in you. By the abundance of your trading. I'm going to talk about trading. Mark that word, because when I came across this, I was like, what is the trading? What does that even mean? Till iniquity was found in you, by the abundance of your trading, you became filled with violence. Now we're getting a description. Not who he was, but who he's becoming. You were filled with violence within, and you sinned. Therefore I cast you as a profane thing out of the mountain of God. And I destroyed you, O covering cherub, from the midst of the fiery stones. Your heart was filled up because of your beauty. You corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor. Now we start to see pride and arrogance because of how great he was. I cast you to the ground. I laid you before kings that they might gaze at you. You defiled your sanctuaries by the multitude of your iniquities. Again, iniquity is a fancy word for sin or lawlessness. By the iniquity of your trading, therefore I brought fire from your midst. It devoured you, and I turned you to ashes upon the earth in the sight of all who saw you. All who knew you among the peoples were astonished at you. You have become a horror and shall be no more forever. So we see that some attributes and some traits here are he was beautiful to look at, drawn to him, all the stones and the precious gems and emeralds that he was arrayed with. We see also the pipes, the organ pipes that he had for his lungs. Many people believe that he was the worship leader in heaven. He was the choir director. He was the music, and it talked about that back here in this passage. Isn't it interesting how powerful music is? outside of the Word of God and in prayer, it is perhaps one of the most powerful tools. It sets the atmosphere. My wife will select, she will ask me many times, how are you going to close the service today? Because the song selection, and many times I will tell her, or she'll just wait and hear the message, and while I'm preaching, she's figuring out what song fits, why, because it can derail the whole message, even though it's a good godly song. If I'm wanting people to come and consecrate themselves to the Lord and come and just bow down and worship and surrender themselves, and she has some song that's this great worship song, it changes things. And so we see here that he was associated with music. So how many of you have been to the gym before? They don't play elevator music at the gym. It's usually hard pounding. It's either rock or hard rock. It's just one of those. Why? Because it does something. It makes you want to lift. It makes you want to really expend some energy. If you have a really good chance of running a red light if you're listening to some fast music. That light could change a half a block in front of you, but if you're listening to some really good music, there's a chance you're just going to step on the accelerator. Now, if you're listening to easy listening and you're all mellowed out and you're listening to something that's a little slower, then the chances are that you're going to just tap the brakes and slow down and just ease away when the light turns green. It affects your emotions. I worked at a restaurant for years, and so at lunchtime, they played oldies music. Why? Because we wanted to turn tables over. They wanted to come in for lunch. We knew that a lot of people weren't drinking. Now, I didn't run the restaurant. I was just a waiter. But I knew the management was realizing that you make money at a restaurant with food at lunchtime. At night, you make money with alcohol and desserts. That's where you make your money in the nighttime at restaurants. At 4 o'clock every day at Red Lobster, we would turn down the lights and change the music. And it would go from oldies music, fast-paced oldies music, lights on, get in, get out, eat your food. You'd find yourself eating and don't even know why you're cramming this hamburger, these fries. You're just cramming it. Why? Because the music fast. And so you're just cramming it in. Didn't even know why, because they set the tone with music. Consequently, at night, if you notice, the lights are low and they turn the music to a different station. It's more easy listening. Why? Because they want you to stay a while. We're not trying to turn a lot of tables over. Go ahead and stay. Have some dessert. Have another drink. And that's what they're trying to do, and they're using music to do that. Music can set the tone for a lot of things. It can set it for romance. It can set it for any number of things. It can set it for violence. There's a lot of music out right now that really, not only in the lyrics, but just in the hard driving beat, gets people amped up. A lot of times the lyrics, and you have to be careful of this. I just heard recently a guy that was I was watching on a podcast kind of thing. He said that what some people don't realize is that within the lyrics of some music right now, what people are actually doing is summoning spirits, because the lyrics that are written are actually a chant or a set of lyrics that are actually summoning spirits, and people are just singing along, don't even realize that you are inviting demonic spirits into your life because you're singing the song, and you sing it over and over and over, don't even realize what you're singing. And the beat is there, the music is there, the lyrics are there, and you don't even realize it is a form of worship, and you just get sucked right into it. Many kids, as kids, played with Ouija boards. They played light as a feather. They played all kinds of little things. They did some things with a mirror. There's something about a mirror. And I've heard on more than one occasion where kids started playing that because they thought it was really weird. Let's see what happens. And some freaky things happened that absolutely scared the daylights out of them. Why? Because you can't play with the devil. Now, he'll look harmless up front until he gets within reach. Now, I was the youth pastor at this church, and I had more than one occasion where I met with parents when they informed me that as the youth pastor, I was being way too uptight about talking about cartoons and Pokemon and some of this other stuff. So I actually did a lesson. Bishop actually let me do a lesson one night, and I preached about it and talked about it. And I just kind of warned the parents. I said, isn't it interesting that in Pokemon, how many of you are familiar with Pokemon? Not that you've played it, or maybe you have, but how many are familiar with the game? Here's what's funny. Here's what's interesting to me. When you first get the character or the beginning of the character, what do they look like? This big-headed baby with these big eyes and little ears and just a little tiny thing. And they're so cute and adorable. They're just adorable. So let me just, so if those of you that raise your hand, so when you run ahead and this thing is at full power and full-grown adult, give me a description. It's like a monster at that point. You take the cute little thing up front, the little dinosaur, the dragon, whatever. It's got bat wings. It's got veins running through it. It's got these red streaks through its eyes. Now the little ears are now big, pointy bat ears. Whatever that character is at full grown is absolutely evil. Why? Because I understand the devil's identity. I understand that partying looks fun at first until it's alcoholism. I understand that it looks funny to watch your buddy. Now, see, in case you don't know, I lost two uncles and a grandfather to alcoholism. One of my uncles, when they drug his body out of the house, the alcohol was coming out of the pores out of his body. We'd go to visit my grandmother's house. He was in the basement all day long, and we would visit from Ohio, and I'd walk in, and I was probably 10 or 12, 13 at the time, and I'd ask Grandma, where's Uncle Lawrence? She'd say, well, he's downstairs. And so I went to the top of the stairs, and I said, Uncle Lawrence, we'd come from Ohio to come see them. He's probably 60 years old. Uncle Lawrence, are you down there? And I think, well, maybe he went out the back or something. And about the time I'd walk away from the thing, I'd hear, psh. I mean, like he's right under the stairs. It wasn't like back in there where I could barely hear it. It was like he's right under the stairs. I've yelled, Uncle Lawrence, psh. I remember as a kid walking away so disappointed that he's right there and he heard me. He doesn't even care that I'm here. He cares more about his beer than he does me. I remember as a kid processing that and walking away. I never knocked at the basement door again. I was too hurt. I didn't want to deal with that rejection again. I was there the day that we went to his house. This is before he moved into Grandma's house. I was there the day. Again, he's a grown man with a grown man job, and he's there at the house. And so we go knock on the door to, again, go visit Uncle Lawrence and Aunt Kathleen again. So we're knocking on the door. And so we go knocking on the door, and there's no answer, no answer. Well, my aunt comes out from the side of the house and jumps in the Mustang. Well, we're parked behind him. So he yells at her to get out of the car. Well, she didn't get out of the car. So he did the logical thing. He threw a brick through the window of the front windshield of the car. I'm probably 8 when I watch this happen. But you see, the commercials don't show that. It shows a man with a good-looking woman under each arm telling funny jokes, and his buddies are laughing, and it's Miller time, or it's Bud time, or it's whatever time, and life is good. I'm the cool guy. You see, you have to understand your enemy is a liar. He's a deceiver. He's going to show you the optimal best of what you could be to make sure he leads you to destruction. He doesn't show the kid the bat monster and Pokemon starting the game. It'd scare him to death. So he has to show you this little cute little duck-looking thing with little pointy ears or whatever the little thing looks like. He's not going to show you the scary part of it. He's never going to show you the scary part of himself until it's too late. That's your enemy. Probably Dale and some of these are going to be too young to remember the Marlboro Man. Big old rugged guy on his stallion up with mountains, snow-capped mountains behind him. He's got his Stetson on, got a little dimple right here on his chin. He's got about a three-day shadow. It's Marlboro Man. Worn leather gloves, stallion raised up. I have seen the pictures of the Marlboro Man before he passed away with emphysema at about 80 pounds in a hospital bed. That never made it to the billboard, though. The actual man that played the commercial, the Marlboro Man. You have to understand your enemy. You have to understand the power of music. You have to understand that it is the closest thing to anointing without being anointing. It has power. That's why you turn it up and turn on certain types of music at the gym. But if you want to relax, you turn on other kind of music or jazz or easy listening, guitar, classical, whatever. You do things because it affects your mood. There is a fallen angel that's behind the industry that you better know that he knows what he's doing and how he's doing it. He was adorned, beautiful to look at. He was anointed. He was perfection, at least till iniquity, sin, lawlessness, disobedience was found in him. Then he became filled with violence. He is a being of violence. Now let me I'm going to be kind of going a lot of places because I'm wanting to paint a picture, and I'm wanting us to know a lot of different things of what he is. And so not only does he always start cute and adorable and attractive, but he's always got an end plan for you. And so it's not pleasant. Even those that are gaining traction and decide, even those that decide, I'm going to be in Satanism, I'm going to be a high priest, I'm going to do this, they will be the most tortured when they get to hell. They think that, well, if at least I'm going to go there, then at least I want to be some high ranking something. You'll be the most tortured there. And so we see this, that he became filled with pride, and his heart was lifted up because of his beauty. It goes on to say he lost a sense of reason. And I'm paraphrasing, trying to re-paraphrase what it said with that. You lost your sense of reason because of your own pride. Now this trading, everybody say trading. In both of those cases, I looked it up, and it really just says merchandise. And so it would seem to be an inclination of what he produced. And so if we go back and look at trading as what he was, what he produced, what he became, what things came out of him, we would see in verse 16 that it says, let me see here, by the abundance of your trading, you became filled with violence within. In other words, by the abundance of what you produced, you were filled with violence. And then verse 18, you defiled your sanctuaries by the multitudes of your iniquities, by the iniquity of your trading. Therefore, I brought fire from your midst. And so what he was, what he reproduced. Now, let us understand something. How effective he was. This is important because if you know who he is, There's a lot of people that feel like, hey, I've been doing this a long time. I've been serving God for 20 years. I've been serving God for 10 years. I've been serving God for 50 years. I know his tricks. I know what he's all about. Mm-hmm. Be careful. Because here's what you also need to understand. In heaven, before there was a real enemy, while all the angels are in heaven where it's perfect, there was this Lucifer, that's who we're talking about here, that got one third of the entire population of created beings in heaven to worship him. That is a frightening statistic. I'm assuming that every angel there knows that they were created by God. I wasn't born of a woman. I didn't have parents. God created me. You. I'm sure that they had a consciousness that they all knew that they were created by God. And we were all supposed to be worshiping God. And this angel, this archangel, this head angel is supposed to be leading us in our worship to him. But somehow a third, he was able to get to worship him. That's astonishing. That is powerful. That is amazing to me. Not just 10%, not just 5%, not just a handful, a third. Absolutely amazing to me. Which means he is a master deceiver, manipulator, has the ability to get you to turn from God. That's why I have felt for the last 3 years that the biggest strategy he's got is to get you to quit. Well, I'm mad at somebody. Then quit. Quit serving God. Quit church. I'm upset. I'm this. I'm disappointed. I've been betrayed. Whatever it is, 1,000 different ways. 1,000 different ways to just get you to quit. So now we go from looking at Satan in heaven. So let's now look at the first account of when we see him actually doing something on the earth here, after he's thrown out of heaven. Genesis 3:1-5. Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God made. And he said unto the woman, yea, hath God said, has God said, you shall not eat of every tree in the garden? Now, I'm just going to go through this passage as we read it instead of going back to it. Everybody say subtle. He's tricky. He's not obvious. All joking aside, he's not the guy on the deviled ham can. He's way more slick than that. He's way more subtle than that. He's very sneaky. He's very cunning. Are there any fishermen, any hunters here? Ladies, I don't know what the equivalent would be for you. I do know that mothers know children. My wife had the ability, the mother of my children, my wife, she could tell me, you hear a kid crying, hear one of our children crying, she'd say, that's a hurt cry. And she'd just run right to it. I'm like, what's a hurt cry? A cry's a cry. No, there's hungry cry. There's hurt cry. There's somebody stole my toy cry. There's all kinds of cries. Mothers know this. And fathers, don't ever question it. When they say it, just agree with them, because you'll be wrong and they'll be right. As a hunter and a fisherman, I know this. I study because we're subtle. We study what we're going after. If I'm going after fish, you just don't use a worm for every fish. There are certain baits for certain species of fish. If you're going after bass, you go to different areas in your tackle box. If you're going for catfish, there's different baits for that. There's different line. There's different poles even. There's different weights of line. There's different braid. There's monofilament. There's different things. If you're going for panfish, for crappie, or for bluegill, there's different baits for that. There's different things for different fish. A fisherman knows that if he's good. He knows different colors for different weather conditions. All these things. Different retrieve patterns for bass. You want to go a little bit faster because they have this strike mode. It's you run it across them faster, they're going to just strike out of habit. A crappie or a panfish, you bring it across them slow to give them an opportunity to want it. You got to understand your species. With deer, you understand that you may do something different for a buck, a male deer. You may hunt them different than a female, a doe. You change scents. You put on camo because you don't want them to know that you're there. You see what I'm saying? You are camoing yourself to make sure that victim has no idea that you are right there. He's not on the can of ham. He's not walking around with a pitchfork and a pointy tail. He's subtle. So a hunter wears camo. You don't know he's there. He will also use different attractants, different things to attract. He will use different things to if they will put out feeders. Why? Because they're trying to play on your appetite. So there's feeders. If you're trying to hunt a predator animal, a coyote, you're gonna put something in the trap or near the trap that smells like food. For deer, you do the same thing. It may be corn, it may be something else that would be corn or a salt lick or some minerals or something, and put some molasses or something on it because it will attract their senses. He's playing on your senses. It may be that you have a little bottle of something that smells like a female deer because you're playing on another appetite, the sexual drive. You're playing on that, hoping that deer will start coming around because of that drive. How many people have been destroyed that they thought was going to be this great, exciting time? And have it just wreck a lot of things in their life. Because he's not going to show you the billboard of emphysema and preaching funerals of uncles that have died in alcoholism. It's going to be Miller time. That's what the picture is. The deer doesn't know it's walking right into a trap. A hunter with camo, with bait set out, and something that's going to really end badly for the quarry. And that's exactly what's set up for you. So when the Bible says that he was more subtle than any beast of the field, get that depiction. Get that image that he's a hunter and he's coming after you. I had a person in the driveway of the church about 10 years ago in Circleville. And I walked out, asked him if he's okay, is there anything I can do to help? He was just out there parked for a while. And he said he introduced himself, nice guy. And so he worked for a particular agency there in the area. So he said, are you the pastor? I said, yeah. He said, do you mind if I share a testimony with you? And I figured if he used the word testimony, he's a believer, right? Because not everybody uses the word testimony. I said, sure. He said, let me share something with you. He said, a number of years ago, I was talking to a friend, and we were just kind of just talking as friends. And I said to my friend, I said, you know what? I said, there's only one way I'd go out on my wife. She would have to be. And then he went through this laundry list of auburn hair, this height, this weight, this shape. He even went to what kind of family she'd have to come from, you know, kind of a high caliber family, you know, high stock, you know, not, you know, kind of high society kind of person. She'd have to be a woman of means. Not just some run of the mill person. He went through this whole laundry list. And because I know my enemy, I already know where this story's going. And he said, guess who showed up? I said, auburn hair, 5'9", and I just went right through his list. Yep. He said, so it happened, because I knew she had arrived. And so I thought this was my opportunity, because this is what I thought this would be worth me leaving my wife for. He said, so this happened over a short period of time, and this thing got horrible. I said, yep. Probably pretty exciting up front. It probably turns into fatal attraction psycho babe. He said, thank God I have a wife that loves God. And as I begged her for forgiveness, and we had a very tough road of recovery, but we're still together today. He said, in fact, he said, you got a minute? And he called her while he's sitting there talking to me. And he had a Bible in his car next to him. And he said, hey, babe, I was just talking to a pastor here and just sharing our testimony and just wanted to call you and tell you I love you. And was telling him about how much you showed me the love of God by your forgiveness and how you gave me another chance. And so got off the phone, and it was a powerful testimony, but he showed me something that I knew was true, and that is, don't let the enemy know what your price is, because he'll pay it. I believe. Now, here's something I have to remind myself of. I believed for years that the devil was like God in the sense that he was just kind of everywhere. I don't believe doctrinally he is. I believe he has to fulfill a location. I believe you could have an encounter with him. But I don't even know that I have ever had an encounter with the devil himself. I don't think I'm a big enough fish for him to spend his time with. This is my opinion. Because if he's a fallen angel, an angel can't be everywhere all the time. Now, they could be invisible, but they have to show up. They have to be somewhere. An angel can't be here on the west side of Columbus and in Circleville simultaneously, like the Lord can. They have to, even if whatever that form is, big, small, whatever their form is, they have to be present somewhere. Well, so does the devil. So don't think the devil is always on your back, because you may not be that big of a fish either. Now, you might be. But there is an indication that there probably is a demonic presence, somebody, a demon or demons that are present. And so here's what I believe, that as we understand him, we have to understand his followers. I believe, first of all, who's got a phone? Hold up your phone. Somebody got a phone, just hold up. Okay, several of you. Does anybody believe that thing's listening to you? I asked that question about 5 years ago, and there was one or two conspiracy people with aluminum foil hats on sitting in church are going, yeah, I think they are. Now everybody, we all know they are. We all, because you talk about the You talk about the Eiffel Tower, and you're all going to be getting ads to go to Paris here in a week. Next day, yeah. Somebody's going to call me probably tonight and say, hey, Pastor, guess what? So what's happening is there's nobody on this planet that emotionally knows my wife and knows the intimacy, knows what she thinks, what she's feeling, what she likes, what she doesn't like, what would make her cry, what would make her laugh. Nobody's going to know that better than I would. Nobody. And vice versa. However, if I were to build a profile of her, I couldn't even begin to touch what Amazon and Google could make a profile of her that I couldn't even begin to touch. They would not only know the brand of soap that she prefers, but within the brand, what scent she buys the most. I squirt it in my hand, I lather it up, I rinse it off. I don't know if it smells like wild berry or cucumber melon. I just want soap. I just want to wash this crud off my hands. But she's getting stuff that smells good. The type of toothpaste, I mean, they know, how many of you know that they are tracking your conversations, your purchases, your credit card purchases, all this stuff, your ads that are being sent to your Facebook, all that stuff. They know you. They know you better than your spouse or your family member knows you. Why? Because they are so tracking everything she does. When she was going to go visit her father, and she was on the schedule to visit him quite a bit while he was going through his deal, she got in the car one day and got in her car and said, time to go to work, 35 minutes. She had gone there so consistently, it thought that that's what her job was. And so it said, time to work is 35 minutes. It told, she didn't punch in work. Well, here's my work location. How long will it take? She didn't ask. It just told her. She got on Waze, and it said 35 minutes to go to work before she asked it anything. What is that? They had tracked her long enough to know that she's going there. That must be her job. So here's my question. If Amazon with your purchases, if Google on your phone, if Facebook with all your posts and where you stop and where you scroll and the things that you watch, if it has a profile, here's my question for you. Does your enemy have his demons watching us . This one, you just have enough people cut in front of him on his way to work, and he's got all kinds of colorful language. This one is lust. This one prefers brunettes. Not even just, he really likes ladies, and he's married, and he really looks more than he should, and he really talks at the office more than he should, and he laughs at jokes he shouldn't be laughing at, and has conversations that are inappropriate. But yeah, he not only that, but he also prefers brunettes. You think your enemy doesn't know that? He's the most subtle of any beast in the field. He's the most crafty hunter. Envy. This person has low self-esteem, so they think stuff will make them feel better. That's why they get angry if somebody else gets a new car, but they don't have a new car. They get ate up with it. Bitterness, unforgiveness. Yeah, that's the. That's the bait we need to use for that one. How many of you have ever felt like when it rains, it pours? It might be because you have some demonic forces that know your weak spot in that one area. That one area is going to be where that enemy is going to keep sending that thing to you. Because that's the lure you're the most likely to hit on. Try to get through this passage. And he said unto the woman, yea, hath God said, you shall not eat of every tree in the garden? Understand this, that the enemy's a master at partial truths. We're going to get some other scriptures, some of the probably next week. But he gives you half truth, enough for credibility. Okay, so let me give you a hint. Don't ever go to a palm reader. Don't ever go to a psychic. Don't ever do that. Because you open yourself up to the spirit. Yeah, well, I had a neighbor that went, and they were legit, man. They told them exactly that their relative passed away, and they had a dog named Sam, and they told them everything. I believe that. The devil knows what's going on. The devil can give them information. But you see, understand this, in the spirit world, the enemy will give you half-truths to gain credibility so that you believe eventually the big lie. So if it can give you some little partial truths to lead you to the big lie and destroy you, of course a palm reader can tell you some things. And it's legit. Well, they just didn't guess. Of course they didn't guess. They didn't have to. There is a spirit world that's not just God and angels. Remember, a third of them got kicked out. They know what's going on in the realm of the spirit. They know you had a dog. They know if you went through a divorce or lost a loved one. They know this stuff. They know that stuff. There is stuff that happens in the spirit world that they can hear, and it doesn't have to just come from God. You don't have to look very far to see that even Saul went to the witch of Endor to try to get some information. She started talking to him about Samuel. There's a very real spirit world going on right there. But it doesn't mean that's God behind it giving you the information. And so he asked her, did God not say that you couldn't eat of every tree in the garden? Now we know what God said. God said, freely eat of every tree in the garden, except this one. So on a technicality, he's kind of true. Because when Satan says, did God say you couldn't? Can you pretend this is a tree instead of a fern? A plastic fern at that. Oh, didn't God say you couldn't eat of every tree in the garden? Always a little bit of accusation in that. The true word said that God said, freely eat of every tree in a garden except for the tree in the midst of the garden. So this half-truth, yeah, technically I can't eat from every tree because I can eat of every tree except this one, so that's not really every tree. So now it starts to call into question. You'll always get in trouble if you start to kind of call God into question on what he's doing and how he's doing things. He gives a partial truth. And the woman said unto the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God hath said, you shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it. God never said don't touch it. We don't really know how that got in there, other than it's possible that the Adam, as a good husband, said don't touch it, but she just referred to that thinking that God said it. But the deal is, God never said don't touch it. So that's not really part of the lesson today, but it is interesting that there is some information here that wasn't truly from God. God didn't say don't touch it. He said don't eat it, lest you die. And the serpent said unto the woman, you shall not surely die. Now it goes from the credibility. I heard what God told you. God said you couldn't eat from every tree in the garden. So that got credibility. So she knew that he knew what God had said, but even though it was twisted just a little bit. Now it goes from credibility because she's still talking to him. You know what? Cast out the devil. Don't talk to him. Submit yourself unto God. Resist him and flee. Don't get in conversations with the enemy. Don't get in conversations with people that are used by the enemy. I'm not going to hang around if I got some buddies that say, and I'm trying to win them, I've got coworkers, I'm trying to reach them, trying to get them to come to church, trying to talk to them about the Lord, trying to pray with them, trying to do something to change their life. If they are continuing talking to me about going to the club or going out with them or going drinking with them or going out and you can look but you can't touch, you know, it's harmless, Bill. It's just harmless. You can look but you don't have to touch. Come on, come out with us, have some fun, have a few laughs. I'm not hanging with that. Why? Because there's a very real enemy trying to lead me into a trap. And I know we talked about the devil with the pointy tail, but there was a song back in the 70s about devil with a blue dress on. And so the devil doesn't always look evil and nasty. Sometimes there's a temptation, there's something there, whether it's alcohol, whether it's drugs, whether it's whatever that looks real nice and attractive, will lead to your destruction. Understand that's how your enemy does things. And he says, "You shall not surely die, for God knows that the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and you shall be as gods, knowing good and evil." How many young people want to know what it's like out there? Raised in church, saved from it your whole life. But I want to find out for myself. Oh, that's a smart one. That's a good one. So you want to go out and get your own scars and your own thing that you're going to have to take medication for, or your own thing where you're going to have a little one that you want to raise by yourself. And the one that says they loved you in the heat of the moment, you don't even know their number right now. Okay. You want to find out how awesome it is out there. I have watched young people. I've watched adults. Because they wanted to experience knowledge. I want to find out for myself. You know, I can find out a lot of things by watching somebody else go through it. If I'm an EMT, I can show up in an ambulance. And in that ambulance, I can show up and help somebody. But if I show up and they say, "Hey, you don't know what this is like. You've never broke your leg before." "Well, but I can still help you. I still know what's going on here." "Yeah, well, you don't really know." "Well, I do know. I've seen enough of other people." I don't have to go out and experience it to know that there's a very real enemy that's setting a very careful trap for me. And so he's doing this with Eve, and she's fallen right into it. And he will give you a little bit of truth to give you to a bigger lie. And in this, we see that he will play on three main temptations. Now, I said earlier for fishing, you got to know your fish. You got to know your species of fish. You got to know, are you trying to trick them? Are you trying to, a bass? There are lures. They make bass lures that look like Bart Simpson, and they have a treble hook on the back of it. Because you just run that thing across the nose of a bass, it's not trying to look, you don't have to make it look just like a fish. It just knows something went by and I got to get it. It's like when you run away from a dog and they just have to run after you. They don't even know why they're doing it. It's just habit. You take off running from a dog, some breeds are just going to chase you because that's what we do. Well, the enemy knows that about us. So here's the three areas that the enemy is going to come against you. And it came against Adam and Eve. And in fact, he came against Jesus in the garden with the exact three things. And here they are. The lust of the eye. She saw that it was good for food. If she would have understood her enemy, there would have been a dirt trail about 100 yards around that tree that she never would have gotten close to that tree. But seemingly they had a conversation right next to it. Why was she so close to the tree? They were apparently so close to the temptation that she was able to take it right there. So he played on the fact that it was good to eat. So there's lust of the eye. Guys are very visual. Guys, we have to be careful, especially when it comes to female. We're creatures that we're attracted by eyesight. Now, ladies, don't think that we're barbarians and we can't control ourselves and all this. We have to control ourselves. I get it, guys. But ladies, understand this. We are attracted to certain things. You ladies are attracted to certain things. There are certain things that you do that we just say, get over it. Get a hold of yourself. Get some self-control. So we're equally messed up. That's what I'm trying to tell you. So the lust of the eye, for guys, it may be a female that you don't go look the second time or the third time. You don't click here. You don't get in certain situations. You don't pick the line. It's funny to me to go to Lowe's and watch the line. It's funny to me to watch the line that has the female, especially if she's an attractive female, has like 12 guys in the line. And you got Frank over here that's 3 years from retirement. Frank over here running the cash register, got a 3-day beard on, and I just walk up, get in his line. There's one guy behind him. And all the guys, all these grumpy construction workers are all laughing and all nice. And it's funny to me. I'm a student of people. It's a people aquarium. I love to watch people. But you see, that's the lust of the eye. And females, it may be something else. It may be shopping. It may be things you like. It may be a house. It may be that you're drawn to things. But we all have things that we're drawn away by what we see. Then there's a lust of the flesh. She saw that it was good to eat, so it fulfilled an appetite. He understands our appetites. Whether it's sexual, whether it's greed, whether it's envy, whether it's stuff, whether it's these things that we want to have, these appetites that we have, and it may be actual appetite. We could destroy ourselves with appetites. It's alcohol. It's drug abuse. It's even dietary. If we could destroy ourselves just as much with overeating as we can with cocaine, so we have to monitor and have to be reasonable in that. So there's the lust of the eye, there's the lust of the flesh, these things I want, these things that I want, these things I have an appetite for, these things that feel good, that I like, that I enjoy, that my flesh wants, even if it leads to your destruction. Lust of the eye, lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. Said that once you eat of it, that you'll be like gods, you'll know. You'll know the difference between good and evil. You know, our phones right now are leading us to destruction. We are getting more and more information. Our kids, no matter how much we try to stay ahead with their apps and making sure they're protected from certain things, I'm certain that the kids that are back here, the teenagers there and the kids that are back there, will see more by the time they're 12 than I saw my entire lifetime of trying to peek and look at things. You'd have a kid at school that would bring a magazine that he found at dad's room and bring a magazine and once a whole elementary school time from kindergarten to sixth grade, one kid brought a magazine that then snuck it to school. These kids, click, click, click. Information, information, information. Watching things, seeing things. Exposure to things. Exposure to satanic type of music. Exposure to movies. Exposure to things. Exposure to videos, to things. Now it's AI, so now it's not even real people anymore. Now it's games, and there's cheat codes that while your kid is playing a game, he goes into a secret room and goes into a secret place, and it's some game where all of a sudden if they get enough points, then it opens up things that the parents never knew. That you get extra points for an assault. Grand Theft Auto a number of years ago. I'm saying this only because there's no kids in here. Grand Theft Auto a few years ago got into trouble. It's a game where there's a lot of stuff going on, and you're trying to steal cars, and you're basically doing all this stuff and street racing and all this stuff. But you could get in some cheat codes and get in some areas and then have a little hanky-panky with a prostitute on the side. Your kids' games. What is that? It's exposure to knowledge. It's exposure to the things they should have never had access to. There's a very real enemy. And I know that makes some of you twitch when your pastor says that. I'm just trying to let you know what the world your kids are in and your grandkids are in, and you better guard them from it, because there's this exploration they want to have. And we all were curious. The problem is we didn't have nearly the exposure that these kids have. So we got to be the gatekeepers, because there's a very real enemy that's after your kids. And so it's the pride of life. I'm going to end with this. I was doing some studying, and I've watched some people on coyote hunting. Coyote hunting is interesting, because when you're hunting deer, rabbits, or something, that's prey animals. That's just, they're used to being hunted. But when you're trying to be a predator to a predator, that's another level. Because these are cunning. You're trying to hunt a hunter. You're trying to kill a killer. And so it's another level. It's a different level of being cunning, being subtle. These guys will boil their metal traps. They will boil them in water for a period of time and remove all scent. They will put rubber gloves on and put them into a plastic tote or a plastic bag, put them into a plastic tote, put them in their truck. They will wear rubber boots and rubber gloves and go out to the spot where they're going to set up. It's called a set. And they will put this trap down. And what they will do is they'll take a stick and they will carve out a perfect outline of this trap. Called bedding it in. And they will lay it in however the trap is looks. They will put it down, wiggle it a little bit, pick it up, and then they'll carve out a spot and put it right in that spot. The dirt that they got out of, they'll get other dirt and they'll put it in a box that has a screen in it. And they'll take this screen and shake the dirt loosely over top of it. They'll get some leaves. They've got rubber boots. They've got rubber gloves. No scent. I don't want anybody to know that I was here. I don't exist. It's just natural. It's just normal. Everybody comes through here. There's no trap here. And then they will put out some scent. And it'll either be some scent of coyote or it'll be some scent of a prey animal that they want to catch or eat. And they will put that scent there. And the curiosity, the expression is, killed the cat. How many Christians were killed? How many Christians got away? Because of curiosity. How many kids raised in church didn't understand that it's not that we're just a bunch of uptight Christians? We have experienced some of this. Some of us were raised in it, were saved from it. We had kids, we have friends that didn't make it. But then some of the adults here have been out in it and have said, "Are you crazy? Why would I go back out into that stuff? I came out of that. Why would I go back into that?" But that trap is totally like it never happened. And that guy with the rubber boots and rubber gloves walks on out and he just waits back and checks it the day or so later. And sure enough, curiosity came. I didn't know there was a trap. I couldn't smell it. I couldn't see it. I had no idea. There was a trap set for me. It's game over. It's done. The trap has been set. That's the enemy. So next time you see this cool concert photo of whoever the greatest musician is at the time, and there's some devilish looking stuff and it looks cool, it's not just entertainment. And that is when they're getting a little bit more brassy. That's we're in a generation right now where good is evil and evil is good. I never understood that as a kid. How's that going to happen? I mean, bad is bad and good is good. I mean, that's pretty obvious, right? Not so much anymore. Next week, we're going to talk about some other attributes. We're going to stop here tonight. We need to know our enemy. We need to know how he operates. He's ruthless. He's a killer. He doesn't care about you. Doesn't care about your family. And he doesn't fight fair. Are there any questions? Are there anybody want to share a personal experience or a story?